Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did at the 11th Newport, California Marriott Jazz Party with Holly Hoffman, jazz flutist. Listen to Holly's inspiring story, because Holly became a female jazz flute player when most of the jazz community believed there was no such thing. So hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. Finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about finding and becoming and demonstrating all of who we really are. Several weeks ago, I started to talk about what I call the relationship contract. And I haven't really finished talking about that yet, because I've had a series of really compelling interviews that have taken up too much time for me to really spend on the relationship contract. So today I'm simply going to say what it is, so you will know that in the future I will be talking more about it. I believe that whenever any two people become related, and that is parent-child, spouse, neighbors, employee-employer, friends, it doesn't matter what the relationship is. When we become related, when we are in a relationship with someone, we sign on to a contract. It's not written, it isn't even conscious, and it only has one clause. I will be who I am, and you be who you are. And as long as I continue to be who I am in the context of this relationship, and you continue to be who you were when we started this relationship, then there are no problems. Only problems result when one or another stop being who they signed on as. So that is what can happen when you discover something about yourself that you have hidden, when you recover it, when you demonstrate it. Perhaps you can begin to see what kinds of difficulty this might cause. Well, I will talk more and more and more about that in future shows. But in this show, I am spending, well, pretty much all of the time playing both the interview with Holly Hoffman and some of her music. Holly Hoffman is a wonderful musician. I was lucky enough to get to see her at the Newport Jazz Party. And I say in the beginning of this interview that what she chooses to play is so beautiful, so musical. And what I'm going to do for you is that right before the interview, I'm going to play a little piece of Mood Indigo, the Duke Ellington tune, that's off her album Live at Birdland. And playing piano on this cut is, well, playing piano on the entire CD is Bill Cunliffe, and drums are Victor Lewis, and featuring Ray Brown on bass, but truly featuring Holly Hoffman on flute. So I'm going to play a little bit of that and then go right into the interview. And so now, Live at Birdland, Holly Hoffman and friends. Thank you. Okay, so I'm here with Holly Hoffman at the Newport Jazz Party, and Holly just literally just came off stage. And instead of standing out there in the hall and getting accolades and all that stuff, she's in here talking to me, which is very sweet. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You were just wonderful.
I had a great time.
You have such wonderful taste. Just what you choose to play, it's so beautiful.
Thank you. We work on that our whole lives,
yes.
Choosing what to play and what to leave out. And I'm always working on the what to leave out part.
Well,
I think that's because when you have classical training and you have a command of your instrument, when you can't think of anything to play, you usually play more than you need to play because you're covering a lot of ground with a lot of notes.
Yes.
But it's harder to play less notes and something more important and pithy and
musical.
Yeah.
That's anyway what I hear, is that it's so musical. It's so beautiful. I'm particularly interested in talking to you for any number of reasons, but not the least is because women are so underrepresented here. I mean, in the set you did with Anat where you said, chicks rule, you were right. And you got to work for it because it's, what are there, three of you?
Well,
of us.
I don't use the word chicks, really, except that I'm often referred to as a chick flute player. It's never a flute player. It's always, with a lot of guys, it's a chick flute player. So we have to make light of it and refer to ourselves as chicks sometimes just to...
Well, I'm a chick singer, and
yeah,
it's worse.
Yeah.
Well, it's much, much worse.
Well, yes and no. For a singer, though, you are always... that's always considered a jazz voice,
yes,
in the genre.
Ah.
And you're accepted because there is a long history of jazz singers and female jazz singers.
Yeah.
Women instrumentalists, not so much, and women flute players, which many, many people consider flute an exclusively classical instrument. It's not the same.
It's
harder because there aren't a lot of forerunners on
you.
This instrument. Well, there was, of course, Herbie Mann and then more recently Hubert Laws, but the people who specialize in flute, not saxophone players who play a little flute on the side, but I mean people who specialize in that instrument and play it exclusively in jazz, which I do now, although I occasionally play classical. But those people are very rare, and so...
The two you named are men.
Yeah, and I don't think the public has heard a lot of jazz flute players.
No.
If you think of the amount of players, flute players, compared to all the other so-called jazz horns, saxophones, trumpets.
Yeah, well, there are dozens of them here. Right.
Dozens
right.
And dozens,
right.
and millions in the
right.
jazz world.
I always ask the question, how did it happen? How did it find you? How did you discover it? How did it capture you? How did it get started?
It really found me. My sister was asked by my parents to bring us an instrument home from school that I could hold. And I'm 5'2" and have very tiny hands.
How old were you?
And I was just turned 6. And she brought me a flute. And
how old was your sister?
She was 8 years older, so she was just entering junior high.
Ah, okay.
So, or maybe even high school then. No, it was junior high, yeah. So I picked it up, and she showed me kind of the basics that she had heard from the band director. And I had been playing flutophone, like a recorder type of thing, plastic, with my dad, who was a jazz guitarist.
Ah.
He was a chemist for his life, but jazz guitarist.
For his love.
For his love, yeah. And worked a fair amount of gigs, too. But I had a little bit of, it's not the same embouchure, it's not the same mouth position at all, but
it's blowing.
Easy for me to feel the instrument. I think I always say that the flute found me because I didn't choose it. I didn't know anything about it in order to make that choice, mm-hmm. but it kind of came home to me. Mm-hmm. And so I started playing with my dad every night after dinner by ear.
Oh my goodness.
And they took me right away into Cleveland, where I'm from, to get lessons. So, classical lessons. And how to master the instrument, you know. But I was still playing jazz every night.
With your dad?
Yeah. Every night after dinner. Really? Without exception.
So, was your sister doing that too?
Well, no, she was a classical. She was more interested in classical music. She was playing oboe. But she had played some flute also, and that's why she brought the flute home. She thought I could deal with that, you know, as a little person.
So you and your dad, after dinner, playing jazz. Oh, mm-hmm. my God. That must have been so wonderful for you.
And the wonderful part of it is this relates to this particular jazz party that we are attending right now. Having been trained by ear before I received 2 degrees, in classical music and theory and understanding what a chord is and understanding what scale goes with that chord and those things, that allows me to come and be able to put, we just threw that last set together.
Right.
In fact, Bob Minzer came in a few minutes before the set and said, well, what should we play? And we started tossing out tunes that we liked and we made something of them on the spot, no charts, strictly by ear, and that is the essence of jazz that so much of jazz education is missing when they try to teach the other way around. This is a chord, this is the scale that goes with that chord, and this is something you could play over it.
Yeah,
the ear isn't developed first, the sight and knowledge is developed first. And that's...
Then you're always doing that.
Yes.
It's always coming from your head.
And I always feel that was the difference for me in being able to earn a living this way, because you can't come to a jazz party and not know tunes and not be able to just
wing it. Yeah, just to play, you know. Yeah,
right.
Well, you can't say, but where's the chart?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And what's the first chord? You know you have to know. So that's ear training and development of ears. That's,
yeah, and that was not planned. I mean, you know, your father didn't say, let me see how I can turn this child into a jazz player.
No, I wanted to play with him, so he would teach me simple melodies, and then I'd say, well, I want to play jazz on it. So he would sing me a little phrase and say, okay, play it back to me. Okay, now we're going to play this phrase. Now play it back to me. So I would just play one at a time, and then we would put those all together and make a solo.
Oh, it's lovely.
It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, I can see it. You know, I mean, I can see it when you're talking about it, and I can only just imagine what it must have been like. I mean, you know, it's clear you loved your dad, you know.
Yeah.
And
I was lucky I had 2 great parents.
Yeah, right, you were. And that is something that comes up over and over again. Your parents didn't say, don't do this. This is a terrible idea.
No, in fact, I wish they had prepared me. My mother wasn't really in the music business, although she played piano. I wish they would have prepared me for what I was going to face as a young female jazz artist. My dad just thought, because he played with big bands, and the women would come in and audition to be the singer with the band.
Right.
And it would be behind a curtain, and they would audition. And the one who sounded the best, regardless of race, creed, color, sex, whatever it was, that was the person
that got the gig. Right.
He or she got the gig.
Right.
So he thought that was the way the world was.
Oh, dear.
And so I was a little unprepared. They were wonderful parents, but they were ahead of their time in terms women's rights and women's respect and careers that women could have.
Yeah. So what happened?
When I started gigging in graduate school, I found there was, they were a little bit, the males were a little unsure that a female flute player was going to be able to dig in and play jazz with them. And so some of them were not kind. So that was my first experience with, this is not going to be what Dad said, which is the best people always get the gig. Well,
right. Oh, please.
Right. But in his day, the best people always got the gig.
Yeah, but
there were no women auditioning.
I was just
going to
say they were all men, right.
Yeah. So then it was possible.
Right.
You know, it was just about skill. So how did you...
Well, I went to New York for 6 summers after my senior year in high school and all the years that I was in college to study flute and composition. My brother lived in New York, so at least I had a place to stay. And Frank West, one of my teachers, and Slide Hampton, another one of my teachers, would take me to jam sessions. And it was brutal, but it was necessary.
In what way was it?
Well, unaccepting people a lot of times.
Oh, yeah, so always about that then.
Yeah.
Not about the music, always about...
Yeah. Unfortunately, some of those sessions, I was not only the wrong age, the wrong sex, I was the wrong color, I played the wrong instrument, I was completely nothing they had...
Yeah.
Ever.
Right. And
experience.
They weren't
really up for it.
No.
Some of them, like Frank West and Slide Hampton, and some of the artists were wonderful to me. So
that, in a way, it made it possible.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that encouragement. That's
important. I was getting very discouraged until then. And they used to work on all the jam session tunes with me, the Charlie Parker tunes, and all the up-tempo standards that they like to call. And they say, oh, you want to come play with us, honey?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here, we're going to play How Deep Is the Ocean? Right. One, two, three, four. And there it was. And it was sink or swim.
Right. Wow.
I had some sinking and and a lot of swimming. You
know? Yeah. It's so interesting to me because I've been thinking... A thought I have not had before, which is that that jazz musicians are the perfect example of how human beings ought to interact, which is to say, they aren't interested particularly in race, color, creed, gender, age, weight, you know, that it's about the music, and if you can play the music, then they're happy to have you, but clearly that either wasn't always the case or isn't even always the case now.
That's, both of those statements are correct.
Yes.
It's not always the case, but it's getting better, and I had, I came to the conclusion a few years ago, things change in your 40s when you are starting to realize that certain things are not going to change. I don't believe that this will change in my lifetime.
Yeah.
Because it's too deep in other areas with women's
That's right.
careers, too. But I know that I'll have contributed to it.
Yes.
Because when I first started to go to jazz festivals, there was just no acceptance. And now, that's changed.
There's some acceptance.
There's quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've recorded 12 CDs. I've played all over the world with some very important jazz musicians. So now I'm not the unknown entity that they can pat on the head and send home.
Right. Or dismiss out of hand.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think I'll contribute to it. I had to come to the conclusion that I wasn't going to see it change, but then... You know, my best friend in San Francisco is an attorney in a large law firm,
mm-hmm.
and she's one of the only women, and she makes less money than the male attorneys,
mm-hmm.
and
they give her a rough time. And
yeah, so it's not just this.
Yeah, no, you.
It's
no.
just that one always thinks that the arts transcend that, and I would like to believe that it's getting better.
Well, I'm embarrassed to say that was what I thought. I mean, I'm looking at you up there, right? And I'm not up there, and I'm thinking, well, you know, right? You're the Jackie Robinson of jazz flute.
That's funny because that's what my husband calls me.
Yeah, right. Well, that's right. And it's an interesting double bind, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to do it,
for all kinds of reasons, because you want to do it, because it's yours, it's you, then I am imagining, so you can tell me if I'm wrong, that there's a certain amount of pride in being able to do it, even though it's really hard, and a certain amount of self-esteem in knowing that you are making a huge difference in the world. You're not just another jazz player. You are blazing a trail that, you know, so yay, all these wonderful things, but then there's the price you pay for it, right?
Yeah, and I'm willing to pay the price, and I've been paying it for years, but it's just that there are times in life where I get tired of
fighting.
Yeah. I think the older you get, the more you really don't want to fight battles in your daily life. And I have an agent now, which helps because I don't have to get the abject rejection on the phone. He gets it as much, but I still get it, you know. Somebody just said to me last night, "Well, I don't like jazz flute. I don't think flute's a jazz instrument, but you're pretty good."
Oh my God.
So people don't even feel that's... And he wasn't trying to be unkind. He was being honest and didn't realize how hurtful that can be, but I'm pretty used to that now. Get a lot of that.
It's a wonderful jazz instrument.
There just haven't been a lot.
You know, actually, I know another female jazz player. Mm-hmm. Dottie Annealy Taylor. Do you know her?
A flute player?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Flute and piano. Yeah. Yes, I do know her. Mm-hmm. I met her once.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful player, but she's also a wonderful... She's the president of International Women in Jazz. So I know two of you. one of the things I ask, and it's really what we've been talking about, I mean, I always ask, having given your life to this art, which you clearly have, I mean, from six, right? Is there anything else that you haven't said about it that you would like to say about what it's like to have dedicated your life to music, to this particular... Well, you know, it's interesting. You said you got trained classically.
Mm-hmm. I have 2 degrees in classical flute.
But you decided to do this.
Well, yes, because this came first, of course, so it was in my heart and soul at a very young age. My mother thinks I got it from the womb because my dad played for her every night before I was born.
Ah, yes.
And they also claim, and everybody that knew me as a child says that this is true, that I bopped on my mother's lap at 2 years old, on 2 and 4. That's how we clap to jazz, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. And I was bopping on 2 and 4 before I ever... Yeah. So she thinks I was a jazz player when I was born. But from all the years of listening to it, and there was big band jazz on at our house all the time. Mm-hmm. That was my dad's favorite genre. Although we had Coltrane records, and we had Ray Brown, and we had... And Ray Brown is another really important part of this. He took me on tour with him the last 2 years of his touring life. And he was tired of being told by the European promoters that he needed to bring a vocalist on the big stages. The trio wasn't enough. He had to bring guests. So, well, I don't know. But he was told to bring tenor, sax, and trumpet, and vocals. And he brought... Regina Carter on violin and me on flute.
Oh my God!
So, that was a shot in the arm like no other for the person that single-handedly changed the face of bass playing in jazz. And the legendary Ray Brown was, you know, firmly in my corner and recorded with me, and we played together for a number of years. Not exclusively, he wasn't my band, but we played often. So that was another, like the early ones I mentioned. That was a big support system.
So it's so interesting because it's as though you had both. You had terrific support from the very beginning. right? I mean, you know, you're in the womb and your dad, from the very beginning you had this cushion, right? Mm-hmm. And then you had these wonderful people who came into your life who saw who you are and who wanted to help. And then you have all this horrible stuff. I mean, it's like an ironic balancing act. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Just enough to keep you in it, but
it feels that way a lot of times.
Yeah.
But as I said, I think the older you get, the more you adjust to circumstances. And I have a sign on my desk above my desk at home. It says, carry the message and don't worry about the reaction.
Yeah.
You know, you have to carry your message as an artist. And everybody who makes an art their life has their trials and tribulations. Look at visual artists. You know, look at
actors.
Yeah, I mean, it's no harder than anybody else's art form when there are stereotypes that have to be overcome, and when there are obstacles thrown up by insecure people.
Yes.
So you have to keep checking yourself that you're doing it all for the right reasons.
Yes. The theme of the show I do is that most of us learn to hide important aspects of ourselves as children, and so we come into adulthood in denial for really important parts of ourselves. Then most people are walking around as diminished versions of who they really are. And the reason that I interview artists is because it's my belief that in order to be an artist in this culture, it has to be who you really are, because you could not do it in this culture. I mean, all the arts are tough, but what you have chosen to do is tougher still. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that what you've been saying, and this is of course why I do what I do and what I believe, is that this is just who you are. I mean, it was not, you didn't say, well, let me see, what can I choose to do that'll be tough? You know?
Right. And on the other hand, when the instrument found me,
mm-hmm.
from that time on, I don't ever remember feeling like I had a choice to do anything else. Partly because of parental encouragement. I wouldn't say pressure, but I would say encouragement. And partly because I was told over and over by teachers that I had a gift and that I needed to
honor it.
Yeah, honor it and hone it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that despite all of what we just talked about, I'm one of the only artists at this party that I can think of that totally makes a living as a jazz player. I don't have a teaching post at a university, although I have, my mother insisted that I get a master's, so I had a teaching credential to teach at the college level, just in case.
Yeah. Fall back.
But I don't, you know, it's, everybody told me that it was going to be impossible for me to be to make a living as a jazz artist. And especially one, a flute player that didn't double on mm-hmm. all the woodwinds, as
right.
most of the flutes and sax players do. So then from that, I remind myself of that probably weekly.
yeah, you did it.
Yeah.
You're doing
so,
it.
Yeah. So you have to be grateful for those things, and gratitude is a very large part of success and feeling successful.
Well, that's wonderful. So are you a little stubborn? I mean, you know, you said that, you know, people told me I couldn't do it. And so is there a little of that in there?
I'm not sure if it's stubborn, but it's definitely, I have to do that thing we just said of doing things for the right reasons. And sometimes I tend to take a gig that isn't the best musical experience, but it's a challenge. So maybe rather than stubborn,
that was what I meant.
You know, I every once in a while kind of dip into that area of, they're not going to tell me I can't do this.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go there and do this. I don't really like
that. I wish I was just doing it all. But, you know, we've got these tapes from childhood playing in our head. Do you know where you got that? I mean, it was an interesting thing to say, and I believe you absolutely, that it's a childhood tape. Do you remember, I mean, is this who your parents were? Do you remember being encouraged like that, or
which thing are you referring to, where I got what?
The challenge thing.
Oh.
You know, the you're not going to tell me what I can and
cannot do. I got that
do.
From my parents because I was told as a very young child, we are not quitters.
Oh, right.
We don't give up easily. We don't give up because it's difficult. It was a bit of an overachiever mentality in our family. We had all college people and graduates and substandard grades were not permitted. And, you know, so there's, yeah. I'm sure that's probably where that came
from. Oh, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right.
And then when I started, then people started telling me that I couldn't do it, then I got into my, well, you know, how dare you?
Yeah. But it seems to me that this combination of things that you are, which is the flute found you, you were, you know, bobbing at two, right? Mm-hmm. Your innate ability to do it, because obviously you have it. I mean, maybe another kid with all the same thing wouldn't have been able to do what you did with your dad. Your affection for your dad, that thing that you could share with him, all that stuff, plus this, you can't tell me what I cannot do and I won't quit, is what makes it possible for you to do what you've done.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So if the flute is going to find a place in jazz, and if women are going to be able to do it, it is this combination of qualities. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. We're very grateful. And all of the ones who come after will be. They won't know, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great, Holly.
I think you're right.
It's really lovely.
Well, I also spend a lot of time where I live in San Diego doing promotions. I've had a series, first Wednesday of the month series for 7 years in San Diego to provide a place for all of my friends, and many of them here have played for me, to play when they're on tour on the West Coast. And so I try to also be involved in the business part of it because I'm a good organizer. And I want to be not only just an artist that goes out and plays gigs and calls up the next promoter and say, give me this gig, please. And I want to find a way to give gigs to other artists. And this group of players here represents what I call the great middle milieu of jazz. We're not the Diana Kralls and the people who've made it huge in business at this party, but we're a very substantial group musically. So those people need to be heard. As far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big part of my life, too.
Yeah, you're a trailblazer.
I just
you
think
are.
It's important.
Yeah. They did great with you. It's great. Okay, so any last thing you want to say about making a life with this particular art, which is so special?
I've met fabulous people in this business, and people like yourself who put the time into having interviews and promoting a sense of the arts, and people who make their livings in arts. These, you know, you're one of the people also that is involved in your own way in the arts. And so it's really a big community of people that do this and
that care about it.
And it's important to look at the positive side other than all the obvious negatives. So, you know, you can consider that yourself, you know, your series of interviews is an important part. Somebody may listen to this
and say, like many young flutists that have been at, that have stopped by the party to hear me, and they said, one woman came over to me and she said, "Can I really do this?"
Oh.
And you know, so maybe somebody's going to hear your interview and say, you know, my daughter can do this.
Yes.
This woman did it, and even though her band director says that she can't play with the jazz band because there are no flute parts, because flute is not a member of the jazz band, you know, instrumentation, she can do this because this lady did it. So it's kind of in a larger sense, what goes around comes around, and it's that same thing of trying to do things for the right reason.
Yes.
I think artists succeed eventually in some sad cases, posthumously, mm-hmm. If they do it for the right reasons.
Yeah, which you are clearly doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Holly Hoffman.
So, Holly Hoffman, doing it for the right reason. And what is the right reason? In my view, the right reason, and you hear it so clearly in everything that Holly says, is that this is who she is, and that no one can tell her that this is not who she really is. And you heard at the very beginning the little piece that I played of Mood Indigo. I mean, it's clear. This is who she is. She's a jazz flute player. And it doesn't matter whether other people don't think that exists. She knows that it does because it is who she is. I was interested to hear her say that her parents made the mistake of being ahead of their time. They made the mistake of believing that she could be who she really is. And as you heard her say, that, you know, they think that she came in with it, that she had it in the womb, that she had it as a two-year-old, and she certainly had it by the time she picked up the flute at six. So her parents were able, and now this is, I think, the fourth show in a row where I am happy to say I am talking to people whose parents said, yes, you can be who you are. Not, ooh, no, maybe that's not so good, or maybe that's not a safe thing, or maybe I don't like that about you. But in Holly's case, it's so interesting because as they were doing what I believe is all that parents are supposed to do, which is to help a child find themselves, not lay on top of them who they should or should not be. So Holly's parents were clearly doing that with all of not only the best intentions, but the loving care that comes with being able to really see your child. They saw that this, she cleaved to it, that it came to her and she said, yes, yes, this is mine, this is me. And those evenings after dinner with her dad, you can just imagine how much pleasure they were all getting out of that. And so, ironically for Holly, they were giving her what she deserved, what she needed, and they were setting her up for something they could not anticipate, and of course neither could she. A world that was not yet ready for precisely who she is. To Holly's credit, to her parents' credit, to our great good fortune, Holly was able to endure, to persevere, to persist, not to quit. And as I believe pretty much always happens, people came forward because they saw her. They saw who she was. And at the end of the show, we're going to go out on another cut from Live at Birdland with you know, Holly Hoffman's CD, and we're going to go out on In a Sentimental Mood. And I want to say it now so I don't forget that right there at the front, the bass player, that's Ray Brown. So what does this have to do with you or me or any of us, really? Well, the reality is, the truth as I see it, is that sometimes, maybe even often, maybe even most of the time, when we are demonstrating completely who we really are, it doesn't necessarily go so easily. Especially if whatever it is that we're demonstrating, that we are funny or interesting or clever or not so smart or accident prone or, like me, dyslexic and have no sense of direction and can't remember where I got whatever it was I got, so I can't put it back in the right place, that when we're demonstrating that and not pretending to be something we're not, which is what so many of us are doing, that the people who discouraged us from being who we really are in the beginning are not going to take so kindly to our having discovered it and demonstrating it. And perhaps you'll understand when I say this, that we tend to train people to expect certain things from us. And so if you have trained people in your life to expect you to be dependent and always kind of need their help, or the other way around, independent and never need anybody's help, then when you switch that, when you discover your capacity to be independent, when you discover your capacity to be dependent, to need others, there will be people in your life who will not understand it and who may treat you in much the way that Holly was treated. That's not okay. We don't believe in that. We don't want that. So, it can be difficult, and you know, this is what I talk about. This is my hobby horse. This is the theme of the show, that it is important, useful. Oh, I can't even find a big enough word for it, right? To be who we really are. But I am not trying to pretend that it's easy or that there aren't challenges or difficulties. But when you hear Holly play, you can hear that it was worth doing. It's a terrific gift to her to be able to do what she's doing, to be herself. And, by the way, it's a terrific gift to us. And it's a terrific gift to all of us when any of us are who we really are. That cannot be overestimated. Okay, so now let me see what I have forgotten to say in this show. In case I forgot, my website is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynnshow.com. And if you go up on my website, you can hear this show again if you like, because the podcasts from all of my shows are up on the website. You can find out about my book and my CD and my counseling practice. I am a psychotherapist, and I do all of my work on the telephone at the moment. You can read an article about that called Psychotherapy on the Go. And let me also, as I always do, thank Josh Hackney, without whom, as I almost always say, the show could not have happened. Not only because he fixes the sound, makes it as good as it possibly can be, but he taught me everything I know, and when I forget it, he is kind enough to remind me without judgment and criticism, a very rare quality in my experience. So if you need anyone who knows about computers, recording, electronics, all that stuff, you want Josh Hackney, and you can get him at my website, thelynnshow.com. And as always, I hope that you learned something in this show that you could use. I hope that you, like me, were inspired by Holly, that you heard something that you didn't know, something you knew but you forgot, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And I certainly hope you will be too. So, Now, going out on Holly Hoffman, beginning with Ray Brown, in the Duke Ellington classic, In a Sentimental Mood.
Thank you.
my face and figure I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten